south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
A few shows ago, I read a long email by a guy named Nonanimous. Like that name? If you recall, he mentioned he'd been down to Central America a lot and found a very nice school connected to a U.S. institution to help his handicapped daughter. Well, today we'll start with the second part of his email that has a lot more general interest. Starts out, Johnny, I've got a wife and kids, which makes me concerned about safety. Although I'm only about 1.5 years into your podcast now, I've never heard you talk yet about ongoing extortion of small businesses, which I know is happening in Latin America. Now, I tried to help a Mexican friend of mine in Mexico start a business there, but he was getting stymied all the time by people demanding bribes so he could secure a retail location. Also, I once saw an extortion letter sent by the Zetas to a business in Mexico requiring regular payments from the business owner or else. Personally, I'm frightened about those kind of threats. Wouldn't anyone be? The question is, are these threats less of an issue south of Mexico? And are property owners subject to this type of extortion too, as well as business owners? I know that once you own property, you can't easily leave it or abandon it. Secondly, Johnny, I love your descriptions of opportunities to create off-the-grid type homes set up with solar, roof catch water, etc. Can you point to some examples where it's been done well? Signed, Nonanimous. Okay, Nonanimous. Sounds like you've only gone through the first maybe 150 or so of my shows. Remember, I've got about 540 out there now in the ether somewhere. Now, as you go through them, you will see that I talk about extortion and criminality, gangs, cartels, the whole works. And, of course, how all that affects expat gringos. If you go into the expat file archives, you'll see some stories of explicit first-hand examples of businessmen getting extorted. And you know, it seems to be the national pastime in Mexico. That's why I wouldn't want to have a brick-and-mortar business in that country for anything in the world. But an internet business? Well, no problem. You can do that anywhere. With that, you probably won't need an office or guards or inventory. No commuting, no traffic, no government involvement, no inspections. Simple, but we're talking about brick-and-mortar businesses now. However, having a brick-and-mortar business is still safe enough in the Yucatan Peninsula area because that's not the major drug corridor. That's the tourist corridor. That would be Cancun, Tulum, Playa del Carmen, etc., etc. The whole Caribbean Strip, straight up from Belize, called the Mexican Riviera. Now, if you've ever been there, you'll see those places are first world nice and sometimes first world expensive, too. And the Mexican police monitor and patrol those places rather well because they are international tourist destinations. And the whole Yucatan economy depends on tourism, and thus, the security and safety reputation must be maintained at all costs. And as for the rest of Mexico, well, you know how I feel about that. Sure, in the big cities, there are upscale islands of tranquility. Mexico has many, many wealthy people who live in upscale neighborhoods and such. You see, in the upper middle class and wealthy gated communities, they have the guards, the walls, the patrols, the cameras, the security, etc., to keep out the riffraff, the no-goodniks, and the undesirables. In fact, in some of those big, expensive neighborhoods in Mexico, you'll find they're just like first-world upscale gated communities, where ladies push their kids in strollers, walk their dogs, and pretty much live a very safe and secure life as long as they're within the guarded gates. However, just a few blocks away could be a completely horrendous ghetto. Where do you think those maids and gardeners come from that are filing in past the guard station every morning to start their shifts? So if you're in Mexico, that's where you want to live, work, and play. In one of those upscale subdivision, guarded, gated communities where everything's pretty safe. Unfortunately, that's where everything's pretty much first world expensive, too. But that's the price you pay if you don't want to get that extortion note that says we need $200 to $500 a month or else. And note, when you're outside of that protected subdivision, if you don't quite blend in, you don't have your eyes open and pay attention, and you don't occasionally change your routine and schedule, there is a chance you could become a target. And as far as business extortion goes, that just doesn't happen in a nice neighborhood. But you see, in the scruffy barrios of the medium and large Latin cities, extortion is a way of life. So, you expat gonna-bes and wannabes, it would be a stupid move to set up a brick-and-mortar business in a middle-class or lower-middle-class Latin neighborhood. If you do, you're just asking for trouble. Remember, when people say middle-class in Latin America, they're talking about what we'd call lower-middle-class kind of trailer trash in the States. It doesn't matter if you're talking about middle-class in Mexico or any Latin country. That's just the way it is. So, beware, green gringos and expats looking for job opportunities. If someone says to you, hey, I've got a great idea for a business and I have a location, if it's in a lower middle class or middle class Latin section of town, don't bite. However, if it's in a nice upscale community with modern nearby upscale malls and hotels, etc., then you're sure to be safe and comfortable, and that might be a good place to put in a brick and mortar business too, provided you're not within a few blocks or even a half a mile of a rundown, scruffy middle class neighborhood, or worse. Now, there's a trick smart gringos and expats use to see if a neighborhood's on the upswing and it's going to stay that way. Just keep a real good eye out for the kind of cars that are passing by and the kind and quality of cars in parking lots, especially what kind of cars are parked overnight in the neighborhood. Because you see, only in very good neighborhoods will people park their nice SUVs overnight on the street. So, in nice, safe, upscale areas, you'll see a lot of nice, high-end cars. However, when there are mostly 10, 15, and 20-year-old cars and a lot of junkers that you'd be embarrassed to drive yourself, that would be middle-class and lower-middle-class neighborhoods, places you don't want to start a brick-and-mortar business. And you don't want to live there either. Anyway, there are countless nice, safe neighborhoods, even in the big cities. But on the other hand, at least half of the zones and subdivisions in any medium to large Latin city, you don't want to live or have a brick-and-mortar business in. And the fact is, I don't know of any gringo who's had a business in an upscale or wealthy area that's ever had an extortion problem. However, I know gringos in iffy areas who have had that problem. For example, I know a gringo who married a beautiful Honduran girl, a Miss something or another. They set up a German-style bakery in the capital city of Tegucigalpa, Honduras, where she was from. Why? Because her family was there and he felt connected and comfortable that there were a lot of people around that she was related to. And Tegucigalpa? About 1 million people, scruffy, chaotic, horrible, terrible urban planning, but some very nice neighborhoods too, because let's face it, every town has its wealthy businessmen, etc., and they have to live somewhere. So they have nice subdivisions there too, gated and guarded, of course. However, the nice neighborhoods are always a stone's throw away from some pretty crummy ghettos. Anyway, he started a nice upscale European/German bakery in a halfway decent middle-class Latin-style neighborhood on the edge of an upper-middle-class district, so they thought they'd be fine. So a few blocks east, very nice cars and first-world amenities all the way, and a few blocks west, a crummy, scruffy ghetto. And soon enough, within about 7 months, he started getting those slips of paper under the door. A local extortion gang was asking for around $150 a month or else. So like Nonanimous says, what do you do? You've got a business location and now the extortion notes come. So anyway, his business was making money. And he said if he didn't have a family, he had a wife and a kid by then, he'd have been more aggressive and put the word out in the neighborhood that he was a crazy-ass gringo with a big gun collection. But since he had a family, he didn't do that. But he wasn't going to give in to the extortionists. He hired an armed guard with a shotgun to stand outside the door of his business. You know, a lot of people do that in Latin America. But you won't see that in very nice upscale neighborhoods and malls. But you will see uniformed guards with a shotgun outside of stores quite frequently in middle-class neighborhoods. Remember, you can have one too for only about $300 a month. Most small businesses can afford guys like that. You see them everywhere. So bottom line, location, location, location. My advice, do concentrate on the movement of the upper middle class and wealthy to the burbs. Now, of course, that's an old concept that's been around for 40 or 50 years in the States, but lag time has finally gotten here, and there's a big trend for wealthy people who traditionally lived in the city to move to the burbs. So, beautiful first-world subdivisions and the malls and the pools and the tennis courts that go with them are popping up around every medium and large-sized Latin city. And that, by the way, is where most of the huge housing bubble in Latin America is, too. But where were we? Oh, yeah, Nonanimous in his email asks, tell me, Johnny, are homeowners as well as businesses victims of extortion too? Well, Nonanimous, in the bad, scruffy, big city neighborhoods, sure. But in the burbs and upper middle class subdivisions, that just doesn't happen. So then, what about kidnappings? In Mexico, you hear about that all the time. And who generally gets kidnapped? What's the profile? That's easy. Pretentious, inattentive people who show off their wealth in public. Now, that seems to be a genetic disease here in Latin America. As soon as a middle-class person gets some wealth and slips into the upper-middle-class bracket, immediately there's a change, and he has to let everyone know he's a somebody. And their kids, because they're equally afflicted with that gene, have to show off to their friends and neighbors and their 7,000 synthetic Facebook friends, too. However, that rarely happens to expat gringos who've been down here a while. Unless, of course, they marry a Latina and turn her into a high-maintenance show-off. I've seen that happen a number of times, and it ain't pretty. Yes, I've seen nice Latin girls from humble neighborhoods make a warp drive transition to a shopaholic in a bulletproof SUV. Yep, many a smart gringo is stupid in love. But that's a story for another day, and we'll get to it. Don't worry. Now, that's not to say it doesn't happen in reverse. When a gringa comes down and hooks up with a Latin guy and turns him into a pretentious shopaholic monster. Yes, I've seen that happen once or twice, but mostly the other way around. But where were we? Oh, yeah. The always lively subject of kidnappings. So, about 95% of the time, I'd say that people who get kidnapped or robbed are people who are showing off, or people of means who stick out like a sore thumb and never change their daily habits. However, in Mexico, it seems to be so rampant, except, like I said, in the Yucatan Peninsula, that just being a gringo in the wrong place at the wrong time could make you a mark. Oh, and by the way, on the same subject, I may have mentioned this in a past show, but when a middle-class Latin all of a sudden comes into a little wealth, most times he'll build himself a little castle in the old neighborhood that sticks out like a sore thumb, or he just might stay put in the old crappy house and add on extravagant and truly awkward-looking additions. And sometimes you'll be driving through a really crap neighborhood and see some rather nice homes stuck here and there. Meaning, a wealthy guy in the neighborhood's drive to impress the neighbors sometimes overrides his common sense. And they're the ones to be targeted for extortions and such. But nowhere is it written that wealth and brain power are two sides of the same coin. Now, let me give you just another small example of that. Recently, I was invited to an engagement party in a middle-class neighborhood. It was located at the parents' house of the young lady, in a house and neighborhood I'd never recommend for gringos and expats. In fact, I'm sure I was the only gringo who ever stepped foot in that house, and maybe even the whole neighborhood. I'd say the subdivision had 2,000 people living in it, without a single gated community, which gives you an idea what it's like. Oh, and before I forget, let me digress a bit and tell you about the DJ. He is around 20 years old, had some really nice equipment. Must have cost him, who knows, $4,000. Plus, he had a little pickup truck, too. Piece of junk, but got the job done. Anyway, I was truly impressed by all the cool equipment he had and the lights and the whole setup with the lasers, the whole bit, fog machines. Then I asked him what he'd charged for a gig. Complete. Equipment, him, truck, delivery, whole thing. He said, $20 an hour, and if it's under 4 hours, $25 an hour. And I understand the average cost for a mobile DJ in the States is around $1,000. Latin America, you gotta love it. Oh, and by the way, no one at that party spoke English. However, almost all of the guys there had t-shirts or sweatshirts on or sweaters with English language sayings on them. What else? And not a single phrase in Spanish. Anyway, I walked into the room and the party was well underway. People were dancing and all that. Guess what? As soon as the guy saw me, he decided to try to impress me with some gringo music. And guess what songs he played? Proud Mary and Rock Around the Clock. Now, you might think that would be a kind tribute to a gringo walking in, right? But guess what? Those two songs were not by the original artists, Creedence Clearwater and Bill Haley in the Comets. No. They were by some gringo clone band, and I must admit, they did the music perfectly, but the words were in Spanish. Imagine that. So I held back my gag reflex until he played the next gringo song in my honor, Stairway to Heaven, which reminds me of my last root canal, followed by the topper, some really rancid horse by Air Supply. All right, so I guess that's what I get for being the only gringo in the house. And by the way, I don't dance unless I'm forced into it. And in the next hour, every single young lady there pulled me onto the dance floor and watched me make a spectacle out of myself. But know that Latin women are not judgmental, especially when it comes to gringos, because we do have that gringo advantage, you know. In fact, I'm sure that through the night, most of those girls had never even spoken a word or much less danced with a gringo before. And of course, they all had their cell phones out trying to take pictures of the gringo dancing and Couldn't understand why I ducked into the shadows and said, "No f***ing Facebook, por favor. Unless you want to be the next piñata with a spear up your ass." Well, I didn't actually say that. I was thinking it, though. And by the way, with Facebook, Twitter, and WhatsApp hugely popular in Latin America, even though that's how most extortionists prey on clueless Latins, no matter, that's a chance Latins are willing to take. To them, it's imperative to be socially connected at all times. Sound familiar? And also to show they've got the dough to buy a Whopper or a Happy Meal. I know, I'm really digressing here, but let's get to the point. Yes, the point, and here it is. At that engagement party, they serve pizza. In fact, a lot of pizza delivered by motorcycle pizza delivery guys, which is the norm down here for all fast food restaurants, even some of the high-class ones. Most offer home delivery anywhere by motorcycle. It's called a domicilio. Anyway, so the pizza came. For a while, I was sitting on the sofa with a lot of people standing around, and I overheard one young lady say to another, a little snidely and with a wrinkly grin on her face, "Little Caesars. It's Little Caesars pizza." And that's when I found out, even with the Latin middle class, which is, again, lower middle class up in the States, the people in that class judge each other's parties and get-togethers by which pizza they order. Turns out, Domino's, Papa John's, and Pizza Hut, which are all down here in Latin America in most big cities, are considered upscale and higher class than Little Caesars because Little Caesars is a bit cheaper. So get this, at that party, girls were on their cell phones texting that there was Little Caesar pizza at the party. Obviously meant to be somewhat of a put-down. So anyway, sitting on the couch that night, I realized they were dissing the party because of the pizza. Now understand, this is middle-class Latin America, and I don't think any kid there had a parent who made over $500 a month, which means their parents probably order pizza for the family maybe once a month. In fact, it's rather a treat for the middle classes to go to any fast food restaurant, kind of like it was in the 60s and 70s back in the States. Now, that shows you learn something every day. I've been down here over 25 years, and little did I know that pizza brands reflect perceived social status. Yep, an important piece of info to know the next time you throw a party. But where were we? Oh, yeah, talking about extortion and crime in the cities in Latin America. So as for Mexico, I wouldn't want to open up a brick-and-mortar business anywhere except in a high-end district. That would be upper-middle-class and wealthy area, and there's a lot of those. However, that's where the rents are high, and certainly you'll be faced with the worst competition of all, gringo competition, because Mexico by far has more expat gringos living there than in all the other 19 Latin American countries combined. So whatever great idea you might have in a brick-and-mortar business has certainly been thought of by another gringo. Now, as far as south of Mexico, there are a few big cities I'd stay away from if I was starting up a brick-and-mortar business. First, I'd give up on Venezuela and the big cities in Brazil. Too much crime, poverty, chaos, and malignant Big Brother government. However, in most other medium, small, and big cities in South America, you just scout out the good, the bad, and the ugly districts of the city you're proposing to start a business in and act accordingly. Choose small towns, or in medium and large cities, choose upper-middle-class neighborhoods in areas where you see a lot of nice cars, as explained before. To make it simple, follow the upwardly mobile trend out to the burbs. I know that sounds so 60s and 70s, but that's the way it is down here. Lag time, you know. And as far as cities in Central America, I wouldn't want to have a mom-and-pop business or even live in Tegucigalpa. The only thing it's got going for it is it's in the Altiplano, but that's about it. And then there's the second largest city in Honduras, San Pedro Sula. I wouldn't want to start a brick-and-mortar business there either. Though there are upscale areas too. It's hot as hell, and there are high levels of crime. Same with La Ceiba, Honduras. It's a mid-sized coastal town where you take the ferries to Roatan and Utila. So it would seem a good, cheap choice if you were into scuba and snorkeling. However, it's a dirty, scruffy armpit, and you wouldn't want to do business or live there either. Take my word for it. Then there's San Salvador, the capital of El Salvador, you know, where all those gangs come from, like the Salvatruchas you've heard so much about, invading big cities up in the States. Well, you know, since so many of them are being deported back to Salvador, I'm not one to recommend a brick-and-mortar business in that city either. Though there are some very nice protected upscale areas and a very lively hotel, upscale disco, shopping, and convention center district. It's still too close to some very scruffy areas for me. By the way, here's something I bet never hit the Milwaukee or the Cleveland 6 o'clock news. In late breaking news, get this. It says El Salvador insecurity is driving away chains of fast food restaurants. The latest to announce the temporary closure of its branch is Hooters of San Salvador. Yeah, you heard right. That famous chain, Hooters. They've got them down here in Latin America, too, in most big cities. In fact, way back when I was doing syndicated radio in Latin America, they happened to be one of my sponsors. Along with, get this, Heineken, Honda, and Harley Davidson, among others. Anyway, it says here, in a statement released by the Hooters parent company, owing to circumstances beyond our control, namely the insecurity and ongoing violence in the capital, we've been asked to temporarily close our Hooters operation in El Salvador. We extend our heartfelt thanks to our ongoing customers, employees, suppliers, and the general public for sharing the times and the excellent experiences we've had here in San Salvador. So, how's that strike you? Well, I'll tell you how it strikes me. Like I said, when I was doing syndicated Latin radio here, they were one of my sponsors, and I was invited to many Harley, Heineken, and Hooters events. And though it might not sound like it, only upscale Latins would attend. Now, note, every Latin American would love to have a Harley Davidson, eat at an overpriced Hooters, and drink Heineken, which costs up to twice as much as the local brew. But only a tiny percentage of Latins, the wealthy ones, could afford those extravagances. Down here, to own a Harley is a status symbol, and they're rarely seen on the roads. In fact, if a guy takes his Harley out 5 or 6 days a year, that's pretty good. Though there are seasonal Harley runs from Latin country to Latin country and their destinations and rallying points. Hooters. I should know, I emceed at a few of the events. And here's what I found out about Hooters in Latin America. Seems like every young Latin girl wants to work at Hooters. Why? Because they've heard the tips are fabulous and they've heard it's a gathering place for wealthy young guys who just might be single. So when Hooters puts an ad in the paper saying they're looking for hostesses, they're inundated. And therefore, Hooters has the pick of some of the most beautiful girls in Latin America because they all come down. What it really is an opportunity for a very good-looking girl from a poor neighborhood to get a job in a nice first-world part of town, hopefully to snag an upscale single guy that can rescue her from her bad neighborhood and possibly save her from those harrowing daily rides on the chicken bus. You know, young girls so hate riding the chicken bus. Every low-class guy and his brother is pinching him, rubbing on him, talking to him, trying to hit on him. Not to mention it's where most of them get their junk jewelry, fake leather jackets, and cell phones stolen too. Now, I can see the problem they're not telling you about Hooters is that it's open till 12 and 1 o'clock at night. And many Hooters girls ride the chicken bus to and from work. At least the first couple weeks or months they get hired on. So, when it gets to be known that a Hooters girl, no matter how she dresses down, is riding the chicken bus, who do you think the bad guys are going to focus on? So, basically, in a city like San Salvador, Hooters girls don't last very long on the job. They either find their knight in shining armor right away, who, by the way, usually ends up being married with children. And if that doesn't materialize, she becomes so terrified of riding the chicken bus at night that she throws in the towel. So then, why don't they take taxis? Well, they try, but in Salvador, a lot of taxis won't go into certain neighborhoods. So as it turns out, it's not so much that the Hooters franchise itself is being extorted. It's the fact that it's an insecure and dangerous job for the girls, among other things. So anyway, bottom line, brick and mortar businesses, there are some big cities you want to avoid. But in the vast majority of Latin cities, no problem. You just have to locate in an upper middle class to wealthy Latin area. That would be middle-class American style and up. Now, of course, there are a lot of exceptions to that rule, and you have to be down here with boots on the ground to see that there are some places, some niches, in middle-class areas that are historically very organized, clean, and safe. But you have to have boots on the ground and eyes wide open. In fact, the other day, John and Jane Galt and I found some fantastic brick-and-mortar opportunities in some places you'd never imagine. And I'm not going to tell you about them. But we might if you come to my next Expat Insider Seminar, which should be in July of this year. Okay, let's finish off with Nonanimous's question about having a home or business off the grid. He's asking if I can point to examples where people are doing that. Well, yes. In fact, 20 years ago, I put in a solar hot water system when I was in Costa Rica. Very cheap and dirty, too. I think it cost around $100. I used what you call polyducto tubing down here. It's very thick plastic tube that comes in a coil. Just threw it up on the roof, spread it out, connected it to the hot water line, and I had pretty much unlimited hot water all day. At night, no, because I had no holding tank or cistern, but it was a cheap and dirty way to have hot water, and that was 20 years ago. So all you gringo do-it-yourselfers out there can have a ball screwing around with solar stuff down here. It's the perfect place because you've got maximum sun power. Because of that, a lot of hardware stores sell complete solar hot water systems. You could get a big one that'll service a family of six for around $1,000 installed. And they work like a charm. In fact, I have a commercially made installed system that gets way too hot. And by the way, almost all the systems are Chinese, and there's a few Israeli systems out there which are double the price of a Chinese unit, but are pretty much exactly the same. Go figure, huh? By the way, I just found out the average cost to install a solar hot water heater up in the States is from $6,000 to $12,000. Why? Because it's super high cost of labor up there, and in most places up north, it freezes, so you need heat exchangers and antifreeze and stuff, a much more complicated system. And down here, most systems carry a 5-year guarantee, and they claim to be able to last 25 years or so. And you know, solar hot water systems today pretty much all have the same technology. A row of vacuum thermal tubes that draw heat into water. Won't go into the details. And down here in Latin America, in every medium to large city, there are probably 6 to 10 different solar hot water heater companies with 6 or 7 different brands. Just shoot me an email if you want me to go into more detail on this. I'll gladly do it. Anyway, and as far as solar panels producing electricity, if you're in the Altiplano region that I like so much, you'll find there's no heating or air conditioning, so you could easily service all your electrical needs with a 3-kilowatt system or even less. Installed, that would be around $15,000 with the batteries. Either way, you'd be looking at more or less 10 solar panels. Then, you can just give the idiots at the power company the finger when you hand them back their more than slightly damaged smart meter. And you know, even if it's rainy and cloudy for 3 or 4 days straight, some of the sun still gets through and you get hot water and electricity. That's why your solar water setup has a 50 to 100 gallon storage tank. And as for your electricity, your panels are charging the batteries all day. I'll be talking a lot more in the future about this, so stay tuned. You know, I always recommend sizing your electric solar panel system to accommodate the amperage necessary to charge up your future electric car. Now, for a Chevy Volt, for example, that would be 110 volts at a minimum of a 20 amp circuit. Then you could be completely self-sufficient. And give the finger to the oil companies, too. Now remember, in a past life, I was a real engineer, so I know half of what I'm talking about, so pay attention. Okay, that said, don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com. Check out the famous John Galt's blogs, and I'm on there, too. And, of course, my YouTube channel.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me, just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!